Please join me in Genesis chapter 32, verse number 32 is where we'll begin in a moment. The story is about the return of Jacob to Canaan. He disengaged from his father-in-law's family, and God helped him in that to stay secure and safe. But now he is concerned about re-engaging with his brother after 20 years. And so last session, we saw how Jacob is sending this gift, very wealthy gift of animals, breeding stock, to his brother Esau, who's on his way to meet Jacob at Mahanaim on the east side of the Jordan River, up in the hill country, somewhere north of the Jabbok River line. And he drags out these groups of animals with his servants in such a way that Esau is going to come across a group of them every few miles. And we'll be told that they belong to Jacob, but they're being given as a gift to his lord Esau. But then Jacob spends the night in the camp at Mahanaim by himself. Verse 22 tells us that same night he arose, he took his two wives, his two female servants, that'd be his wives' surrogate maidservants, his 11 children, that's the boys, 11 sons, he's got a daughter as well that's in this mixed, and crossed the ford of the Yabbok. Now this river, this system, this wadi system, drains into the Jordan River about halfway between the Sea of Galilee and the Dead Sea. And so Mahanaim is apparently on the north side of the Yabbok, and Jacob takes his family and sends them to the other side so that he is all by himself at the place that his servants told Esau that he could be found. Verse 23, he took them and sent them across the stream and everything else that he had, and Jacob was left alone. Now, I am convinced that he is praying. He is spending the night expressing to God his fear and his hope. His fear of Esau, but his hope that God will deliver him from the anger of his brother. And we already know that he has said back to God the promises that God has made. And that is definitely a form of prayer when you read back to God or quote back to God his promises to you. Verse 24, the second phrase, can be a little bit puzzling. It says, a man wrestled with him until the breaking of the day. So at some point during the night, a human being shows up, and Jacob ends up in a wrestling match with him. Now, we don't understand how this started. We don't know if there was any type of conversation that went on in the midst of this. We are told that Jacob believes eventually that it is God, because he names the place Penuel, the face of God, for I have seen God face to face. I would really like more detail on this, but this is all we get, other than a little bit in the book of Hosea. So if you will, just kind of mark your place in Genesis, but go back to the back of the book, Old Testament part of our Bibles, to Hosea chapter 12, and let's read something that the prophet Hosea revealed about this incident. Hosea, just to give a little background, is actually kind of being used by God to challenge the Israeli people to do better, to do the right thing, because they're not always doing the right thing. And so there's a play on the idea that Israel gets its name from Jacob, their forefather, because all Israelis come from the genetic line of Jacob. So in Hosea chapter 12, verse 3, it says, "In the womb he took his brother by the heel." And we remember that part of the story. So when he was in his mama, he grabbed his older brother Esau by the heel, and that's how they came out. In his manhood, meaning many years later in his adulthood, he strove with God. And the wording here in Hebrew is exactly where the name Yisrael comes from, to strive with God. So Hosea gives the indication in that verse that he was wrestling with God himself in human form. Verse 4, "He strove with the angel and prevailed." So here we have the mention of an angel again, and so it's a little bit confusing to us. Is it an angel of God that represents God, or is it God himself? I have come down on the side of it is definitely a theophany, that's the technical word, an appearance of God. And that the word angel here is representing the idea that it is a messenger of God's very presence. In, I think it's the book of Ezekiel, we are given the indication that the angel of God, which preceded the Israeli people during their Exodus experience, the tower of cloud by day and fire by night, the Shekinah, that this was the angel of the Lord, but Ezekiel indicates that this angel of the Lord was in fact the Holy Spirit, who is God. So I wonder whether this is the Holy Spirit taking some sort of human form momentarily, or, as some people have suggested, perhaps it is Jesus the Son temporarily taking human form and wrestling with Jacob on this night. But ultimately, we can't unravel this with any specificity. But verse 4 of Hosea 12 says, "He strove with the angel and prevailed." That's important. "He wept and sought his favor." He looked for God to take care of him. So that seems to be the thrust of this wrestling match. And then it goes on to say this, which we'll get to momentarily in the Genesis passage. "He met with God at Bethel, and there God spoke with us." The Lord, he who is, the God of hosts, he who is his memorial name. And so Hosea kind of wraps it all up to continue with his point that it's all about the relationship with the true and living God, the one who was, is, and will always be. So as best I can tell, back in Genesis 32, when it says that this man wrestled with Jacob until the breaking of the day, this is a physical manifestation of God. And Jacob seems to be aware of it. And it's like a prayer petition session that gets physical. And Jacob is like, God, you've got to take care of this. You can't let him hurt me or my family. I know he's angry. I know he's mad, and he's got reason to be so. But you can't let him kill or harm any of my people. Please, God, you can't let it happen and keep your promises. That is what I think is going on here, is that he's wrestling in prayer with God. Now, verse 25 says, when the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob. Now, that's interesting. The man here is the angel of God, the manifestation of God that we were talking about. And Jacob just won't quit. He just keeps at it. He won't let it go. He wants God to assure him it will be okay. And so when the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched his hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. So God just reaches over there, touches his hip. His hip gets apparently dislocated momentarily. Even if it popped back in right away, it's still very painful. And he is down. He cannot continue upright easily. But what's he doing? He still won't let go. He's still holding on. He is persistent in this prayer request. Verse 26, then he said, let me go, for the day has broken. Now, it's not that God is worried about the sun hitting him or something like that. It's the idea, it's time. It's time for you to meet Esau. We've got to move on here. The day is broken. So you've got to let me go and go meet Esau. But Jacob, still holding on to him, said, I won't let you go unless you bless me. So that's the reason why I'm saying that this whole incident seems to be focused on getting God to promise him it'll be okay. Blessing. Verse 27, he said to him, so God says to Jacob, what's your name? And he said, Yaakov, heel grabber. That's my name. I'm a heel grabber. I'm a person that pulls people back to take their spot. Right? That's the indication here. And so he then said in response to that, your name shall no longer be called Yaakov, heel grabber, but rather Yisrael, for you have striven with God. That striven there means, is the word that is the Yish part of Yisrael. Okay, Yishr is going to be the verb form here. You've striven with God, Ael, and with men, because he definitely has. He's kind of been in this wrestling match with his brother and with his father, a little bit with his mom, and definitely now with his father-in-law and with his brothers-in-law, even his own wives. He's kind of been wrestling and struggling with his whole life. And you've prevailed. You've gotten through it all. So God gives him a name change. He says, yeah, you used to be the heel grabber, the leg puller, the one that wanted to push people out of the way so you could get ahead. But from here on out, You're going to be called the one who has wrestled even with God and gotten through it. It's a big deal, folks, that this name change comes at this exact moment. And so the Israeli people are called Israelis and not Jacobites because of this story here. Verse 29. Since they're talking about names, Jacob asks him, "Please tell me your name." And he said back to him, "Why is it you're asking my name?" And I find that this is a bit of I don't know if irony is the right word. It is a bit of God saying, "Come on, Jacob, you know exactly who I am. That's why you're acting the way you're acting, is because you know that I am whom I am. I'm the one that you have wrestled with in order to get to this point in your life. I'm the one who blessed your grandfather and your father, and now you want me to bless you too and take care of you, which I've already told you I'm going to. So why are you asking who am I? You already know." See, that's what I think the thrust of this episode here at the end is. And there, he blessed him. He actually said to him, "All right, Jacob, I'm blessing you. Now get out there and make the most of that. Go out there and meet your brother." And so, verse 30, Jacob called the name of the place Penuel, which means literally face of God, saying, "For I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered." And so the sun rose upon him. So the sun rises and is climbing in the sky as he passed Penuel, limping because of his hip. And so Penuel and Mahanaim are close to one another there by the Yabuk River, which in turn, neither one of them can't be very far from the Jordan River that the Yabuk River flows into. Now, we have a little note here that Moses throws in to explain to the Israeli people a practice that they'd been doing for centuries and maybe did not remember why they were doing it. "Therefore, to this day, the people of Yisrael, the descendants of Jacob, do not eat the sinew of the hip that is on the hip socket of all the animals. They avoid the meat that is close to that particular hip socket. Because he," meaning God here, "touched the socket of Jacob's hip on the sinew of the thigh." So they kind of use this, or they originally use this as a reminder that there's something special about that little hip socket. But over time, they'd forgotten. And so Genesis is the book of beginnings. So often, Prophet Moses is helping them remember the beginnings of things, including traditions. Now, chapter 33. Jacob lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, Esau was coming, and 400 men with him. So as he's coming to his family, remember, they crossed the river ahead of him. He was all by himself during the night wrestling with God. So here he is back with them again. And wherever it is he's at, apparently he has a good view down into the Jordan Valley. And Esau and his group is traveling toward him along the Jordan Valley, and then they'll probably cut up the Jabuk Gorge or the Jabuk Canyon. How can he see him so far away? Any type of large group tends to raise a little bit of a dust cloud. And so he can see them miles away moving toward him. So he begins to get ready. Listen to how he gets ready. So he divided the children among Leah and Rachel and the two female servants. So we already know that that's kind of their tent arrangements. Leah has her tent and her kids stay with her in the tent. Rachel has her tent, her kids stay in with her tent. And that'd only be Joseph, by the way. And the two servants, Bilhah and Zilpah, they have their kids in their tent that they share. So he put the servants with their children up in front. Now, that's a little bit frustrating because of what he'd already said earlier, that basically he divides his family up into two camps because if Esau attacks one, the other side will get away. Well, he makes his two surrogate wives and their kids be the first ones that meet Jacob, or excuse me, Esau. So there may be a little bit of an understanding that they're most at risk. And therefore, I hesitate to say these words out loud, but it's pragmatic. He apparently does not value them as highly. Okay? And then, next in line was Leah with her kids. That includes his heir, Reuben, who is 12 years old right now. He makes those kids and their mom be second in line at risk. But he keeps Rachel and Joseph last of all. So that tells you his valuing of his family members at this time. And I think, remember, the kids are ranging from 12, certainly, you know, Reuben and Simeon and Levi being, you know, 12, 11, 10. They certainly have some sense of what's going on here and the risk that's going on. And there may be, you know, some of their later attitudes come from this devaluing or lower valuing of them, especially since Joseph, the baby of the family, he's only six, is the one that Jacob clearly values much more. But he puts himself at risk ahead of all of them. So you've got to give him credit for that. He himself went on before them all, bowing himself to the ground seven times until he came near to his brother. Interesting, we have some Egyptian texts from a time period shortly after this, a couple of hundred years, I think, where the writer, trying to show their respect to the reader, says, "I bow myself before you. I bow before you seven times. Seven times do I put my face on the ground." See, because that was a way of showing you're in charge, I am your servant. So he is humbling himself greatly before his twin brother. And then the story breaks. I love this verse. Verse number 4. But Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. He has not seen him for 20 years. And he runs up to him and grabs him in a great big hug, gives him, I don't think, just the superficial air kisses that you see as a kind of a traditional greeting still in the Middle East, you know, the kissing at both cheeks. I think he's really giving him an affectionate, "Brother, I love you. I've missed you." And the moment he shows that genuine affection, the dam bursts, the emotional dam bursts. And I think Jacob begins bawling. Esau is bawling. They are crying. Understand that they are both 97 years of age. Now, they are very healthy and strong 97 years of age because they live much longer lives in this family and during this time period. But they are older gentlemen that are just so overcome with emotion of being back in the presence of one another. They're twins. And so now we know it's going to be okay. That Esau is well over his mad. And so when Esau lifted up his eyes, so once they get past their greeting, and he saw the women and the children back there behind Jacob, and they're kind of arranged in little groups, he said, well, who are these with you? And Jacob said, the children whom God has graciously given your servant. And then the servants drew near, that'd be Zilpah and Bilhah with their kids, and they and their children, and they bowed down. Leah likewise, and her children drew near, and they bowed down. And I'm sure Jacob is introducing them all by name because they're all part of the same big family with Esau, and so everybody needs to know everybody. And then last of all, Joseph and Rachel drew near, and they bowed down. And so now the whole family has been introduced to Uncle Esau, brother-in-law Esau. And again, we can tell that everything is going to be okay, which is exactly what God had told Jacob, who is now Yisrael. Well, we'll mark our place right there. And when we come back next session, we will continue settling Jacob back into the promised land.